Ringers. Coming soon, it's the disaster movie of the summer. Four politicians with their own special powers, determined to save Britain from evil. It's the Not-So-Fantastic Four. Andy Burnham is the bendy one. The one who can stretch himself to unbelievable lengths and twist himself into knots on any policy decision.
Look, it was only by abstaining on the Commons vote over a further £12 billion of Tory cuts so that I could demonstrate I was opposed to not opposing the cuts by not abstaining on my decision to abstain. Oh, my God, I'm stuck. Can somebody unbend me?
Liz Kendall is the fiery one who shines so brightly that people can't even bear to look at her. She is the keeper of the Blairite flame.
I'm the only one who can scare the Conservatives. For God's sake, I scare everyone else, so it stands to reason.
And Jeremy Corbyn is the thing. The huge, craggy creature that looks a bit like something prehistoric. One punch from his giant lefty fist and he'll smash you right back to the 1980s.
Well, life was better in the 1980s. We had CND, Angry Miners, Derek Hatton and Puffer Puffer Rice.
And Yvette Cooper is the woman who can make herself totally invisible.
Hello.
Kendall, Cooper and Corbyn, the Not-So-Fantastic Four, crashing and burning at a general election near you soon.
You're listening to Today, and the shock news is that the BBC is so skint, they've lost the rights to the Pips.
That's right, John, we're hearing they were outbid for the Pips by a 15-year-old boy called Gavin.
We have Gavin on the line.
Wow, this is brilliant. This is so monster. I'm on TV.
No, this is radio.
Oh.
Now, you've got the Pips.
Yeah, I fancied something retro for my ringtone.
How much did you pay for the Pips?
I paid £8 for it online. BBC never saw that coming. They were only prepared to go up to £6. The BBC lady was crying and everything was well sick.
Gavin, thank you.
No problem, Santa. Give us a shout when you get to telly, yeah?
The Director General, Tony Hall, has insisted there is no cause for alarm. He joins me now, deep underground from the BBC's Salford bunker.
Hello, Jim. We don't need the Pips. We can't justify extravagances like that. We have plenty of BBC talent willing to take the place of the Pips.
Like who?
Terry Wogan. He's going to fill the Pips void by making 5 of his short whimsical noises followed by 1 of his longer whimsical noises.
Hello, you're watching Newsnight during silly season. You really need to lighten up. Joining me first tonight via satellite link is foreign correspondent Lise Doucette. Hello, Lise.
Evan, I'm surrounded here by scenes of chaos and utter desolation.
So, where are you? In Gaza?
No, Evan, I'm off on holiday trying to get a Ryanair flight out of Luton Airport.
Oh, right. Well, surely it can't be that bad.
Oh, yes, it can, Evan. All the flights have been delayed, and every time I ask someone what's going on, they shake their heads sadly and say, I'm sorry, I don't speak whatever language it is you're speaking.
Oh, dear.
Really, I've seen terrible things here, Evan. Perhaps worst of all, a loud man in his 20s singing a song called Olé, 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 and demanding that we all lighten up because we're on our holidays and it's all a laugh, isn't it? It's rumored he's since been beaten unconscious with a giant Toblerone. And I must say, Evan, there have been some of the angriest protests I've ever seen.
So rioting, smashing windows, that sort of thing?
No, mainly people refusing to show their boarding cards in W.H. Smith.
So how are you coping?
Well, I'm doing the best I can to avoid the conflict, Evan. I've taken refuge in a small branch of monsoon. But my situation has grown worse. I felt obliged to buy several sarongs that really don't suit me.
So, Liz, what will you do now?
Well, Evan, I've decided that in order to save my holiday, I'm abandoning this route. I'm just going to get the ferry to Calais for some peace and quiet.
Hello.
Oh, yes, hello. I wanted to, is that Snappy Snaps Windsor?
It's me, yes.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I just wanted to ask about some of my wedding photos. You see, a few of them have turned up quite out of the blue. You see, I just wondered if there was any more that I might have forgotten about, you see. You don't have them there by any chance, do you?
I would need more details in order to know what we're looking for.
Right, so right. Well, they're quite distinctive. I'm sure you'd be able to find them amongst all of the, I don't know, the holiday snaps. Or I'm the dark-haired fellow wearing the military regalia.
Okay.
At the side of the younger lady in the very resplendent dress with an enormous train. Does that sound familiar at all?
Not instantly familiar, no. What's your name, please?
It was at St. Paul's Cathedral. I think the Queen's in the background in some of them. That's got to narrow it down a bit, hasn't it?
Can I have your name, please?
There's also one of me in a Woolworths tracksuit next to Adamant and Shaken Stevens, I think it was. Just take care with that one.
Again, not instantly familiar, but I will certainly try and track these down for you.
Thank you very much indeed, and yes, the CBE will be on its way to you.
Morning, folks. Welcome to the Daily Politics, daytime television for the discerning dropper. So the Liberal Democrat Parliamentary Party has been reduced to a rump, and not a Kim Kardashian-sized one either. More the sort of skin and bone affair you'd find on a flamingo. I'm joined now by the new Lib Dem leader, Tim Farron.
Good morning, Andrew. Have you noticed that I'm not Nick Clegg?
Yes, I'm well aware of that.
I mean, like, not even slightly. I just think it's worth emphasising how not Nick Clegg I am.
Mr. Farron, your party was virtually wiped out at the last election. What mistakes do you believe the Lib Dems made between 2010 and 2015?
Oh, I wouldn't know. I wasn't around then.
Yes, you were. You were party president and a member of parliament.
Yeah, but for Westmorland and Lonsdale, which is like bloody miles from Westminster, so I was barely ever there.
So even though you were a senior member of the party at the time, you take no responsibility for what the Lib Dems did in government?
The Lib Dems were in government? Are you sure?
OK. 10 years ago, your party had 62 MPs. You now have 8. How long is it going to take the Lib Dems to recover?
I'm under no illusions, Andrew. It's going to be a very long road back.
Do you think you can get there by 2020?
No.
What about 2025?
No.
2030?
No.
2035?
No.
2050?
No.
2100?
No.
2200?
No.
2500?
No.
What about the year 3268 AD?
I think that's a realistic target, yes.
So what are the Lib Dems going to do between now and then?
I believe our main priority should be to develop gills.
Gills?
Yes, Andrew, because the human race will be amphibian by the time the Lib Dems are back in business. So let's get ahead of the game.
Tim Farron, thank you.
Please, call me Aquaman.
Hello there, it's me. Yvette Cooper? Don't worry, I didn't recognise me either. This is a special YouTube message to ask for your vote in the Labour leadership contest. But not just any old vote. I want your second preference vote. You see, throughout this campaign, I've said virtually nothing of any interest whatsoever. And as a result, the momentum behind me as the candidate that people think they sort of might as well put down as their second choice has become unstoppable. Now, here's what some Labour supporters have been saying about me.
Yvette Cooper, yeah, she seems OK-ish.
I certainly don't actively hate her.
I guess anyone who's married to Ed Balls deserves a tiny bit of support. Which is what I'm going to give her.
Some glowing tributes there. You can, of course, vote for me as your first choice in the election, though I can't think of a single reason why you would. And with your half-hearted support, and provided by some miracle Corbyn doesn't win outright, I believe I can sneak into the Labour leadership by the back door and unite the whole party in a feeling of weary anticlimax. Thanks for listening, unless you weren't, which is fair enough.
Newsbeat.
You're listening to Newsbeat, I'm Tina Dehealy. Coming up, the conflict in Calais. We ask migrants what they really think about Little Mix's new single. But first, this week we heard the happy news that Andy Murray is going to be a dad. And our reporter caught up with him at his training camp.
Andy, you must be really happy.
I'm absolutely over the moon.
So you're not nervous at all?
No, not at all. I think I'm really well cut out to be a dad. Fun-loving, warm-hearted and a bit wacky. Yeah, I'm great with kids. They love me. Listen, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Yeah, that's great, but
if you're happy and you know it and you really want to show it, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
That's really great. So what...
Peek-a-boo. Where's Daddy? Here he is.
Oh, well, that's great. But...
I've got your nose.
No, stop it now. And what about the birth itself? Is Kim going to use anaesthesia?
No, I'm just going to talk to her. She'll be out like a light. Newsbeat.
Hello, I am Andy Burnham. Eyelashes by Disney, hair by Lego. I want to talk to you about something that's happened to me. Something wonderful. I was in a bad place. I was health secretary. I didn't believe in helping the sick or looking after the less fortunate in society. Then I had this change. Call it an epiphany. I was sitting at home, eating my chips, wearing my tripe and onions, and stroking my bacon butty. And then, like a vision, a man came to me, a man with a kindly face, with white hair and long white beard, and he seemed to speak directly to me.
If I become Labour leader, I will renationalise public services, scrap tuition fees, and pay for it by taxing the rich.
Then I realised I'd just woken up during Newsnight. This man was explaining why he was 20 points ahead in the polls for the Labour leadership, and I felt a sudden, inexplicable urge to change my ways of thinking and start giving away money and helping people who need help. I know, who would have thought that I, who once privatised a hospital, could change so profoundly? But that's the power of prayer. And God knows I'm praying shed loads right now. So believe in me, Andy Burnham. Born again socialist, right to the tips of my Armani cuffs.
You're listening to Today with me, John Humphreys.
And me, Sarah Montague. And with the time coming up to 7 o'clock, here is the moment where the pips should be performed this morning by Ronnie Corbett.
The producer.
And coming up in the next hour, David Cameron has actually said he'd do something and actually gone and done it. Admittedly, that something was go on holiday, but still, it's a start.
But first, Benedict Cumberbatch has been making all the headlines at the Barbican, where he has been playing Hamlet to his adoring fans.
And the playwright William Shakespeare joins me now. Mr. Shakespeare, this must be a big thrill for you.
Well, in sooth, I don't think I'd be lying when I say this has been the high point of my life. That someone of the stature of Mr. Cumberbatch would do my little play. It's such an honour, I've got to tell you. I mean... Methinks this is really going to put the name William Shakespeare on ye oldie mappy.
It has to be said, you are quite well known among clever people.
Well, i' faith, thou speak'st true, but come on, Sarah, this is Cumberbatch. This takes things to a whole new level. I was mobbed in the post office yesterday. I mean, oftentimes I'm sneered at and called a bloody hipster. Hey, I had a beard before they were annoying, you know.
Actually, I did read a feature in Grazia which said you wrote it with him in mind.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in faith, I probably shouldn't be quoting this, but confidentially, when we went rollerblading last week in Hyde Park, Cumberbatch said, "Bill," because that's what he calls me. "Bill," quoth he, "this Hamlet character has been my most fulfilling role yet."
That's a bloody lie, Shakespeare, and you know it.
What on earth are you?
Oh, here we go, bloody Conan Doyle.
Cumberbatch told me that Sherlock Holmes was the most satisfying role of his career.
You take that back, you peasant swain. Thou horse and malt horse drudge.
Now, gentlemen, you can't fight in here.
Right, I've had enough of this. Shut up, the pair of you. I wrote the New Testament 2,000 years ago. And the only reason I did it was so that Benedict Cumberbatch could play the main part, the heroic carpenter, who gets killed and eats fish, yada yada. And let me tell you, if he doesn't get that false beard on pronto, I'm going to flood the West Country again like last time.
Surrounded your coach, Alberto Salazar.
I've been told not to say anything.
In case you incriminate yourself.
No, because my voice sounds weird.
Do you believe any of the accusations against him, Mo?
No, I don't. And it makes me sad when people say these things. Sorry for raising my voice.
But surely, Mo, these kind of questions will always follow you if you surround yourself with dodgy people like Salazar.
There's nothing dodgy about Salazar. Yes, his name sounds like a Bond villain and he's always stroking a hairless cat. But everyone knows hairless things run faster. Before I met him, I had hair like John Bon Jovi. There is nothing dodgy about any of my team. My new accountant, Mr. Blatter. My new physio, that dentist what killed the lion.
And who's that behind you, Mo?
That's my new tactician, Dick, and his dog.
Quiet, Muttley. If anyone gets near Mo, we'll drop an anvil on them.
Finally, Mo, can you confirm whether or not you have ever consumed any questionable substances?
No, and I'm sick of people asking for the last time. I don't actually eat the corn.
Maggie, 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 out, out, out. Oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. I'm Jeremy Corbyn. Leave your progress at the door. Thanks for listening to my campaign cassette tape. I was going to do a YouTube video like the others, but I've refused to learn anything new since 1986. This modern world is pretty terrifying. It's all Instagram and croissants. That's why I want to return to the good old familiar days. Free higher education, nationalised railways, working coal mines, the threat of imminent nuclear war. It's all gold. I want to bring back everything from the 80s. Dexy's Midnight Runners, HIV, Saturday Superstore. People say to me, "Jeremy, if you become leader, the Labour Party will be in permanent opposition for the next 15 years. And I say, "Brilliant, just like the good old days." Sadly, the current Tory government aren't quite as repulsive as the 80s one, so I've arranged a celebrity telethon to buy David Cameron a Margaret Thatcher mask. Although I suppose he could just borrow the one he bought his wife. Then I could get really riled up in opposition, because let's be clear, I don't want to be Prime Minister. I don't want to get involved in the mucky business of testing my policies. I just want to shout them from the moral high ground. Down with capitalism. Free the Birmingham Six. Come on, Eileen. So vote Corbyn, and I promise that the Labour Party will never be in power again. Viva Socialismo!
Hello. Gardener's question time this week comes from Fumble on Why.
A quaint village known equally for its antique pottery and its irrational hatred of foreigners. On the panel today, Bob Flowerdew, Bunny Guinness, and someone who doesn't have a funny name, so we won't be hearing much from them. Our first question comes from Alexandra.
Hello, Eric, panel. To give you a little background detail, about 9 months ago, my husband and I were in the local garden centre having a row.
Arguments with the spouse at the garden centre, we've all been there, eh, panel?
We certainly have. Vanetta and I had a ding-dong about fuchsias just last month.
Anyway, he was insulting my drooping agapanthus when I noticed Gregor, one of the assistants, and, you know, when Gregor smiled, it was just like the sun coming out on a cold November day.
Okay, so what's your question, Alexandra?
Anyway, Gregor and I kept in touch. We met for a coffee a few times, and one thing led to another, and we started... Well, you know, he made me feel like a natural woman, and when he touched me, it was just electric. I had feelings I'd never had before. Fred, my husband, well, he said he would never give me a divorce, not ever.
Yes, yes, well, that question, perhaps, about gardening?
Oh, yes, yes. Sorry, anyway, to cut a long story short, panel, how long should it take for a human body to dissolve in a lime pit?
Now, I don't think the panel is going to be able to help.
How deep is this pit?
It's dug to about 20 feet, Bunny.
Well, that's very nice and deep. South-facing?
Well, it does get the sun in the evening.
And is the lime packed quite deep?
Reasonably so, yes, Bob, but he just won't dissolve. He's oozing round the, you know, right through the patio.
Did you hack the limbs off first?
Oh, should I have?
Typical beginner's mistake. Yes, you should. Never mind. I'd say even despite that, the body should be fully decomposted within around 8 to 10 weeks.
Oh, well, that is a weight off my mind. Gregor and I are getting married, you see, and you don't like having these things hanging over you.
OK, so, next question. I hope none are about dissolving bodies in lime pits. Oh, there's quite a few. Now, okay, well, put your hands down if you haven't killed your spouse after an argument at the garden centre. Oh, just one. And your question?
Well, my husband threw a cigarette end in my rockery and I was just polishing my shotgun when it...
Well, that's all we have to do. Don't forget, if you've been affected by any issues regarding this programme, call Crime Stoppers immediately.
Hello, and welcome to this, the first ever PM's podcast. A new initiative that I'm really excited about and don't understand. Now, I know many of you are concerned about the number of migrants who are trying to come into this country to seek a better life. So, to deter them, I've been working hard over the last 5 years to make Britain a terrible place to live. I've cut tax credits. I've shrunk the NHS. I've ensured the main character in the next series of Poldark will be fully clothed at all times. But clearly, this isn't enough. We have to remember that the main reason these people want to risk their lives trying to come through the Channel Tunnel is because of the awful place they're coming from, France. Which is why I'm putting together a financial aid package to improve France. For starters, those rusty holes in the ground will be converted into actual toilets. And not one of those embarrassing unisex ones either. French waiters will have to start being polite. And when people take the trouble to speak to the French in their own language, they will no longer be allowed to reply by talking as fast as possible, throwing in the odd Dutch word just to confuse us. And croque monsieurs will be called what they are, which is ham and cheese toasties. If all this fails, and we do get immigrants coming through the tunnel, we'll do what middle-class Brits always do when people come to our door wanting charity. Turn the lights off, duck down behind the sofa, and pretend to be out.
Hey, Chuck, welcome to Radio 2. Sarah Cox here playing dated music and telling boring anecdotes about my kids. It's just like a Sunday tea at your sister's. Well, the big cheese is at Sawney due to announce he'll be singing the theme tune to the upcoming James Bond film Spectre. We've got hold of a few of the potential options. I'm so excited, I've done a little wee. So, without further ado, our first track is from Pammers. The Martini was Bond's 23rd, and his words were already quite slurred. He got all mistaken and ordered it shaken, when really he wanted it stirred. Well, and even better, this next track is actually a song. It's good old Morrissey.
He could have any woman he desires, but he abstains out of respect for the sisterhood. He's got a gun, but he rarely ever fires, cos he's a pacifist and he'd ban firearms if he could. He's got a car, but he doesn't take it on long missions, cos he's worried about his greenhouse gas emissions. He's got a licence to be the caring vegetarian, feminist, pacifist, environmentalist spy who loved me.
What now? The front runner, drum roll. The one we've all been waiting for. I'm so excited, I'm salivating like Pavlov's puppies. So is the only real candidate for the next Bond theme. Who says Radio 2 isn't relevant? It's Jazz and Dave.
Gadget, 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 gun, gun, supercar, gadget. He's got a boat that drives and a car that flies. A typing that's a knife for stabbing enemy spies. An exploding pen and a waterproof watch. A computerized Beretta which he fires from his crotch. He's got a super cool pair of those X-ray sunglasses which he uses to spy on all those Bond girls' asses. He's got gadgets coming out of every pocket. And he's got something in his scuba suit that looks like a rocket. Gadget, 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 gun, gun, gun again. Super duper Parker pen, fast car, gold bar, big crotch, flashy watch. Hands off, that's my lunch. Oi!
Listening to Dead Ringers. It was performed by John Colshaw, Lewis McLeod, Jan Ravens, Deborah Stevenson and Duncan Wisby. It was written by Tom Jamieson and Nev Fountain, Lawrence Howarth, Ed Emsden and Tom Coles, James Boggs, Sarah Campbell, Duncan Wisby and Liam Byrne. The producer was Bill Dare. It was a BBC Radio comedy production.